Breaking news today on Seculo as the FBI finds a massive document stash on targeting Christians.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. We've got a lot to talk about today. Breaking news out of our case FOIA with the FBI, the number of documents related to their, again, their research. They are, remember, they're trying to put agents into radical traditionalist Catholic churches, Christians, that they were spying on in the post-Dobbs world. Well, we now know the significance of how far this went, and it was not just the Richmond field office, and how many documents the FBI has just on the targeting of Christians. So we're going to get into that, but we've got some other news to discuss before we do.
Yeah, we've got some sad news, and this is one of our colleagues for many, many decades, actually for over 30 years, three decades, our director of public relations for many, many years, just recently retired, Gene Kapp, who's one of my closest friends. I talked to his wife, Carolyn, this morning when I received the news of his passing. It was like hearing the news of the loss of a brother. Passed away after a battle with cancer. Gene had a tremendous influence. He was a broadcaster in some major markets, including Norfolk, Virginia, where he was a primetime news anchor. He also was the public relations director for the Christian Broadcasting Network, for the American Center for Law and Justice, and for countless other organizations. He was a tremendous and gifted communicator. He was also a tremendous and gifted colleague of ours. Jordan, he knew since, Jordan, you knew Gene since you were, I think, 4 years old, 5 years old. We go that far back. Same, of course, with Logan. He was really, Gene and Carolyn are part of our family. We lived in, there's a shot up. That was during some intense negotiations during the special counsel probe. Gene was advising us and the president as to communication strategies at that time of the Mueller investigation. So I just want to extend our sympathies and prayers for Gene's entire family. I'm telling you, this was a tremendous loss for us. I fortunately was able to have dinner with him several months back. We laughed a lot. This was before his diagnosis came in. I talked to him, of course, numerous times while he's been sick and fighting this illness. And I will tell you, this was someone we relied on for advice and through thick and thin. Gene took us through so many significant moments in our ACLJ history. In fact, just about every significant moment in our ACLJ history, Gene Kapp was part of it. And he is sorely missed. He has been sorely missed. He did a great job of training our team to continue his important work. But this was someone that ministries relied on for counsel. He was a counselor to the counselors. And that's a pretty high calling in my view. That the lawyers that were representing people like Dr. Pat Robertson and Paul Crouch and so many other ministries around the globe relied on Gene Kapp's advice, including presidents of the United States. And I just want to say again that our thoughts and prayers are with his family. I'm still in a pretty much a state of shock on this, Jordan. I just literally had the call a few minutes before we went on the air, but I didn't want a moment to go by without saying thank you to Gene. I know he's in heaven. I know he's in a great place. I know he's out of pain, but that doesn't eliminate the pain that his family's going through right now, although they know, and I know Carolyn, speaking with her, she knows he's in a much better place. But the fact is, he's a beloved colleague and friend and someone we will miss and we will not forget. And we're going to have some pieces put up on ACLJ, Jordan, commemorating his life
until Gene was sick. You were still hearing his voice
on this broadcast.
I mean, the intros and outros, and we thought it was right at that point to make that change. But I mean, you were hearing his voice introducing this show for decades, the ins and outs of the Seculo broadcast. So whether or not you were an online listener, a traditional listener, wherever you got the broadcast, you knew Gene. You knew the voice. He was on the broadcast for how long?
For a couple of years. Yeah.
And of course, so again, a major part of our television broadcast.
Yeah,
he was a
co-host of this broadcast for probably 8-10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he'll be really missed, and our love and thoughts to Carolyn and to his family, and we'll talk more about that in the days ahead.
All right, folks, we'll be right back on Seculo. Secchio. We'll take your calls, too, at 1-800-684-3110. We've been engaged in a battle with the FBI and the FOIA. Once we found out this memo out of the Richmond field office, here it is, the memo from January of 2023, from this year, talking about how they need to assess the increasingly interest of racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists. Those are RMVEs in, and this was the kicker, Radical Traditionalist Catholic. They actually came up with an acronym. They love acronyms in the federal government, RTCs, that an ideology that presents opportunities for threat migration through exploration of new avenues for tripwire and source development. We know that in one case, they actually placed an undercover agent inside one of these churches. When they talk about a radical traditionalist Catholic, they're talking about Latin Mass. They had no evidence, by the way, no evidence that any violent extremist groups who usually would not be, especially the ones racially motivated, ones that would particularly work with the Catholic Church ever or be associated with the Catholic Church ever. There's no evidence that they were trying to infiltrate the Catholic Church. This was just an idea that, hey, maybe we should go spy on Catholic churches. We know that actually occurred in one instance, that there was actually an undercover agent placed inside a Catholic church. But what we were told by Christopher Wray, can we play the sound real quick? We were told by Christopher Wray and the FBI that this was horrible, but it was just Richmond, and it was just the Richmond field office. And take a listen.
Your FBI wrote a memo talking about radical traditional Catholics. I'm just wondering if you can define it for us.
Well, what I can tell you is you're referring to the Richmond product, which was a single product by a single field office, which as soon as I found out about it, I was aghast and ordered it withdrawn and removed from FBI systems.
Yeah, aghast and removed. By the way, a couple of misstatements there by Director Wray. Number one, it wasn't just the Richmond office. And the Richmond office may have produced the memo. It was in coordination with the Los Angeles office and the Portland, Oregon office. By the way, the Los Angeles office is one of the top five offices in the country as far as size go. Richmond's not a small office either, I might add. And that's number one. Number two, one document, well, we went to federal court because that's what we do at the ACLJ. So when you ask, how do you hold people accountable? You find out what's going on, then you take it to Capitol Hill. Pursuant to the court's July 17th order, the parties conferred and the FBI is represented to the plaintiff. That's us. There's the lawsuit. Thus far, ready for this, folks? It has identified 1,200 pages of potentially responsive documents. 1,200 pages of potentially responsive documents to the targeting of Christians with zero probable cause, with zero evidence to go in, with no evidence of wrongdoing. 1,200 pages of FBI documents going after the church.
Yeah, I mean, again, we know. And these 1,200 documents, what we asked for was not just documents related to the Catholic Church, but related to Christianity, pro-life people, anything involving the FBI's director, deputy director, chief of staff, general counsel, or any of the higher level ranking officials, talking about the Dobbs decision as well. So, I mean, this goes to Christianity, Catholicism, pro-life activists, any discussion on abortion, Dobbs, and they've got 1,200 relevant documents that they have identified. So again, when they try to play it down that as one bad memo in one field office, it's Richmond, Virginia, and then they say it, and once they found out about it, they pulled out, nothing ever happened. Then we found out actually there was action taken on the memo, that there was at least one that we know
of. Yeah, we know of.
Of an undercover agent put inside a Catholic church. Again, on a basis of no evidence.
I mean, think about what you just...
They were just sitting around going... Where else could violent extremists want to go?
Think about what you just said, though. You just said, correctly, they put an agent in a Catholic church with no evidence at all of wrongdoing. Zero.
No, just because of that church happened to be, in their view, radically traditionalist Catholic, which, by the way, is a term the FBI made up.
Yep.
That's not a colloquial term used, radical traditionalist Catholic. And again, I mean, a lot of Catholics that listen to our broadcast support the ACLJ. I think you would fall under this category. If you were someone who takes your faith seriously, that's what they were identifying as a radical traditionalist Catholic. But we broadened out the search and said, well, if they're working with them, I mean, what about Christians? What about just using terminology like that? And you'd think if it was just Richmond, it wouldn't be 1,200 pages of documents. 1,200 100 pages of documents the FBI is going through right now that they will have to produce to the ACLJ because of this FOIA.
And that's what they have right now. So this is what they're saying, you know, right now they've got 1,200. But what I want to focus on is the idea that, first of all, Christopher Wray was totally incorrect with what he said. So that was a totally incorrect statement. Our whistleblowers have talked about this. The clients we represent, Agent O'Boyle, we represent him. Here's what he said.
And then on top of that, like a day or two after I learned of that threat tag, I was tasked from headquarters to query one of my confidential human sources who was a pro-life person and asked them all sorts of questions about the Dobbs decision and, you know, if there are people in the pro-life movement who are mobilizing to be violent. And as this is happening, I'm thinking this is way out of bounds here. You know, people who are pro-life, they're not going to be trying to attack anyone, certainly not a Supreme Court justice, because all the people who were picketing and protesting and rioting outside of Supreme Court justices' homes weren't people who were pro-life. So at that point, I was like, okay, this is an abuse of authority. This is a misuse of power. And so I brought that to Congress, too.
So let me tell you something. He brought it to Congress. He's testified to Congress. We filed this week at the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia his case. The ACLJ is representing them with our friends at Empower Oversight. And we've got a whole team we assembled, including some of the leading lawyers in the country that have represented people at the highest levels, including presidents. And these lawyers, this team that we've assembled, is a top-notch team. And we're going to put our arguments through. It's going to end up at the Supreme Court of the United States, because what they've done is they leave these guys in terminal limbo. They do not fire them. They suspend them. They don't fire them. They don't pay them, though, because they're suspended. They don't remove their security clearance. They don't cancel it. They suspend their security clearance. And then because they're still employed, even though they're not getting paid, they can only earn $7,000 in outside income. The proverbial horrible catch-22. And our government is doing that at the highest levels and thinks that's okay. And that's why the American Center for Law and Justice is front and center on these issues. And as you look at these issues and how they develop, understand what we found here. Let's put it back on the screen. We went to federal court. We filed this lawsuit, the United American Center for Law and Justice versus the Federal Bureau of Investigation. This doesn't make you friends in Washington, but let me tell you what it does do. It gets you this. There are 1,200 pages of documents at least responsive to our request. So this one field office report, which the report's about 18 pages, is backed up by who knows what kind of emails and who they were talking to. We do know who they were talking to. At least we know they were talking to Portland, the offices in Portland of the FBI, and the Los Angeles offices. So there was both coasts were coordinating here. And we know there's at least 1,200 pages of documents related to it, which we'll get. And we know what our client, Agent O'Boyle, said, and that is now in the Court of Appeals. So we're at the district court on one level. And then for the agent, we're at the Court of Appeals, one step from the Supreme Court of the United States. So as we launched our Life and Liberty Drive, I need to say, and I mean this sincerely, folks, we are at the halfway point. We're doing great. We had a great response, but we need that response to continue. We're literally halfway through our Life and Liberty Drive at this point. I never thought there'd be a more crucial time as there is now to discover more information about what the deep state's doing now targeting Christians. We filed that lawsuit against the FBI because we wanted to find out what was going on with the targeting of pro-lifers. And boy, are we starting to find out in ways we never imagined. We're also representing the FBI whistleblower, as I mentioned, O'Grady. So that is a dual aspect. One's in federal court, one's in the Court of Appeals. Director Wray testified, as I said, that the targeting was limited to just one rogue office. We know that is not the case now. We know it was Richmond, Los Angeles, and Portland. And because of our litigation in the FOIA realm, it's made possible, which is made possible by you, because without you, we don't get to do this, because we got a big team on our FOIA practice. We know that the FBI has notified us that they found at least 1,200 documents, pages of documents related to the targeting of Christians that it will be turning over. And then we've got to go through them. This is just the beginning of these cases. That's why we created the Life and Liberty Drive. And we had no idea when we did this that all of these cases would be coalescing at the same time they are. Here's the truth, folks. The deep state is attacking our religious freedoms and they're using the FBI. They want to bully Christians into silence because who wants to be dealing with the FBI? We're fighting back and exposing the corruption in court, which is where we do it. You're a vital part of this fight. We want you to be part of this fight with us. Have your gift doubled right now through our Life and Liberty Drive. Jordan's going to let you know how to do it. But, folks, this is the time to get engaged.
Yeah, we want you to be part of the Life and Liberty Drive. To go to aclj.org. You'll see that new information, that new logo right there on the Life and Liberty Drive. To be part of this campaign, be part of, again, supporting these whistleblowers, getting this information, and making sure we expose the wrongdoing, the targeting of Christians by the FBI. Go to aclj.org today and donate. We want to continue, folks, to take your calls in at 1-800-684-3110. If you got questions and comments about what the FBI has been exposed to be doing, again, 1,200 responsive documents to our FOIA on their memo that we know now was produced out of Richmond, Los Angeles, and Portland by the FBI, not just Richmond, but at least by three offices, including, as you said, a major FBI office, Los Angeles, one of the biggest cities in the United States. That there are 1,200 documents related to the targeting of Christians by the FBI that have stemmed from that one memo that supposedly existed. And then we were told no action was done. Well, then we were told, well, at least there was some action taken because we know at least on one account, one apart occasion, there was an undercover agent put inside a Catholic church to try and figure out if they could recruit informants within the church. Based on no evidence that there was any radicalization or extremism going on inside these churches, but just on a hunch. And we heard from FBI agent O'Boyle, who said, you know, the people who were angry after Dobbs weren't the pro-life community. That's just using common sense. It was the pro-abortion. It was the abortion activists who were spray painting the death threats on pro-life pregnancy centers. And I think only two of those people have been arrested in the entire country. Only two. We've seen our clients violently attacked in the streets because of their pro-life message. It was Brett Kavanaugh who supported the overturning of Roe versus Wade, who had to have security in his yard because someone got two blocks away with a gun to kill him. So again, we know they come to Congress with bogus information and we don't let them get away with it, the ACLJ.
Talking about not letting them get away with it, there are other places we don't let them get away with it, and that's at the United Nations with our work for our office in Jerusalem on our work on behalf of Israel. Jeff Balaban's joining us now and is on his way back to Jerusalem, I think, in a couple of weeks or maybe even sooner than that. Jeff, the big story coming out of the Middle East, though, is Iran again. We've been very involved in that. Iran moving towards a possible atom bomb test. That's in defiance of Western sanctions. This comes on the heels of the United States giving, what was it, $6 billion to the Iranian regime just a couple of days ago. What's the latest from Israel?
Well, yeah, Jay, I'm heading back, God willing, next week. The latest in Israel is tremendous concern. Obviously, Iran is openly declared itself to be an existential threat to the existence not only of the Jewish state, but of the millions of Jews that live there. They have declared that they want to wipe Israel off the map. But I also want to remind our viewers that the reality is that Iran already has ICBMs. It has delivery mechanisms to actually send its nukes here to America. So this is a threat that Israel is on the front line. It's nearby. It is an existential threat, but it's truly a threat to major population centers in the United States as well. And for some reason, this administration seems intent on them getting nukes and providing them billions of dollars while claiming that they're trying to prevent it.
You know, I think what we're trying to, obviously, is everybody's trying to figure out what the Biden administration is. You know, what are they actually trying to do? For a while, they were dead set on getting the JCPOA put back in place. And then one of the lead negotiators for the JCPOA, he had to be taken off the team because he was sharing classified information. Remember that? He was one of the lead guys.
We've got a FOIA on that right now.
Yeah. Yep. So we know that Iran is in this situation. I'm sure they're looking at what's in Russia, Jeff. They're looking at Ukraine. And they see the U.S. in this kind of mess of a situation with really an unclear policy. And this would be their time And it unfortunately comes right after the Abraham Accords, that Saudi Arabia felt like they had to go and make a deal with Iran because they were afraid of what Iran might do with a nuclear weapon.
It's exactly right, Jordan. You know, people don't recognize, you know, Israel has been open secret, believed to have nuclear weapons now for decades, but they've never declared it openly. Meanwhile, the Saudis, the Egyptians, the stable, large Sunni Muslim nations that have need stability and are deeply threatened by Iran, as soon as it became clear that Iran was getting closer to its own nukes, they declared, well, if that's the case, then they're going to need nukes as well. Now, recognize what that means. This administration, like the Obama administration, seems dedicated, intentionally or otherwise, to completely destabilizing the most volatile, toxic, dangerous region in the world. And what happened between Obama and Biden was Trump came in and we had the Abraham Accords, which obviously all of us here on this in discussion worked on. And suddenly there's normalization, there's stability, there's warm relations. And here comes the Biden administration back trying to collapse all of it while saying they want peace, while saying they want to, you know, keep the Iranians from getting nukes. Everything they say seems to have nothing to do with everything they do.
Because if the other administration did it, they don't want to do it. I mean, it's that simple. Even though we had, it changed the entire reshaping in the Middle East. We have delivered to the president of the incoming president of the Security Council, which happens to be the American ambassador, Linda Thomas Greenfield, our letter, which sets forth why the Palestinian Authority is not recognized as a state. We do this every time there's a shift. But the fact of the matter is the other Arab countries are pretty much sick of the Palestinian conflict as well and want to see normalization. So last question, Jeff, as we are dealing with this, and we're dealing with this at the highest level, you're meeting with government officials in Israel at the highest level, folks. I mean, we deal with the prime minister's office. And as we deal with it in the international bodies like the United Nations, what people need to understand is this is an ongoing monthly fight. You've got to deal with this every month.
That's right. Look, there is a crisis of communications between Jerusalem and Washington. There's a crisis of communications. Israel relies very heavily on support from the United States of America because, thank God, the people of America overwhelmingly support the safety and security of the Jewish state. Meanwhile, official Washington on the left, they seem to have no interest in it whatsoever. They want to force the existence of this Palestinian terror entity. And there is a crisis of communication. We, thank God, step into that role and help direct communications between policymakers, let's say in Congress, and policymakers in the Knesset, between the prime minister's office and people in Washington to try and help resolve that so there's much more clarity, because right now it's dangerous to all of us.
We appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks for the update. Very, very important work going on in Israel. We have an office in Jerusalem. That office doesn't exist without your support. And like I said, we're dealing at the highest levels of the government there, defending Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state. So again, your support to the ACLJ makes a huge difference. We're taking calls too. Do we have time to take one in here? Yeah, we do. Will says we can take one on the other topic. Let's do it.
Yeah, Jim calling from Oregon on line three. Hey, Jim.
Oh, hi, Phyllis.
Yep.
I was wondering, what is the legal pretext for the FBI to keep somebody from getting a second job when they're under suspension?
It's a regulation that exists within the Department of Justice and particularly within the FBI employment manual. But what they've used it for is a whipsaw, to chain their employees so that they cannot maneuver around a system when they are being harassed or discriminated against, which they are. Or if they blow the whistle, because you just suspend the clearance. And then they come back and say, and your clearance review can't be reviewed by anybody else but us. Now, we're challenging that at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. And Justice Gorsuch has raised serious concern about that issue. He has said that in an opinion, saying
that impairs their ability to get another job, too.
Correct. They lose their security clearance, they can't get another job. Folks, this is exact. Look at this. Jerusalem, whistleblowers, FBI, religious freedom victory yesterday for that Bible study for that senior center, filing the brief on the prayer for Ocala, Florida. All of this happens because of your support. Join us at ACLJ.org and go to our Life and Liberty Drive. It's right there on the homepage. And respond to the email we've sent out this morning. Your gifts will be doubled. That's ACLJ.org. Now, we've got another half hour of this broadcast. You can get it at all of your social media platforms or at SiriusXM, ACLJ.org, and, of course, a lot of radio stations. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome back to Seculo. We're taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We started the show talking about, again, more information involving the FBI's targeting of Christian. This all happening under Christopher Wray, who has always tries to go and testify. We played that testimony earlier saying, you know, it's just one bad office and one, you know, a couple bad actors. And once we saw it, we put an end to it. And then we found out, well, the Richmond FBI office actually did this in conjunction with the LA office and the Portland office. So it went from coast to coast and that's what we know and what we've learned from our FOIA work and the congressional investigations. We just had a joint status update on our FOIA that we sent into the FBI on the targeting of Christians, the radical traditionalist Catholics, the acronym they came up with, the fact that they put undercover agents inside a Catholic church. We know that occurred. And they told us in response, they've got 1,200 documents so far that are responsive to our FOIA. So it doesn't sound like it was just out of one office in Richmond. In our FOIA, we specifically asked for documents relating to high-level FBI officials as well, not just field office officials. Then we knew from the whistleblower Garrett O'Boyle how they're after Dobbs, the just not using common sense. Roe versus Wade had just been overturned. Who was happy? The pro-life community. Who was so angry? The pro-abortion community. You don't have to even, again, take a side on the issue just to use common sense. And yet the FBI targeted the pro-life community, ignoring the fact that the real threats that we saw in real time, we saw people with weapons showing up in the neighborhoods of Supreme Court justices, were pro-abortion activists. And yet the FBI was focusing in on no evidence related to whether radical groups could infiltrate the Catholic Church. That's what they were focusing their efforts on from coast to coast. We, again, are going to get to the bottom of this and see exactly how far up the chain this went at the FBI. But we now know there are over 1,200 documents relating to, and we went broader than just Catholics. We said Christians, pro-lifers, Dobbs, and high-level officials inside the FBI. And we know there's over 1,200. That's what the FBI has told the court.
1,200 pages.
Over 1,200 pages of documents have been identified since our FOIA was put in.
And at the same time, of course, we're defending our whistleblowers who have talked about all of this. So, you know, when people say, what kind of action can you take? You can take pretty direct action. It's exactly what we're doing. Let's go ahead and take a phone call, though.
Yeah, let's go to Joseph in New York on line one. It's a question we get often.
Yeah,
go ahead, Joseph. Through the ACLJ. Hey.
Thank you for taking my question, guys.
Sure.
And God bless you for what you do.
Thank you.
What if you could explain in layman's terms for us, because I'm no lawyer by no means.
Right.
What's the difference between the separation between religion and politics and the Constitution?
Yeah, so there's no phrase that says separation of church and state in the Constitution. The phrase in the Constitution is should be no government establishment of religion and nothing should be done to prohibit the free exercise thereof. So like we just did this case out of the city of Ocala. They had a crime spree. The community got together, including the city officials, and they had a prayer vigil, and some atheists sued, saying, we don't like this prayer vigil taking place. And our argument is that's not the government establishing a religion. It's not saying to live in Florida you have to believe this particular creed or this particular religious dogma. No, it's allowing enough expansion in the joints, so to speak, of the Constitution to allow religious expression. And I've argued a series of those cases at the Supreme Court, and the law has actually developed very nicely now. In the most recent case involving a coach, the court got rid of what's called the Lemon Test and established instead a history and practice test. And there's a long history of prayer and prayer activity in the United States. And that's how you win these cases. And that one, by the way, is probably headed destined for the Supreme Court in the United States again. It's already been up there once, but I think we're going to be up there again. Here's what it tells you, folks. Your support of the ACLJ, whether it's FBI whistleblowers, whether it's a prayer at a senior center, whether it's in Israel, whether it's a fight for a prayer rally, your ACLJ is there, and we're there because of you. We're in our Life and Liberty Drive, and we want you to participate.
That's right. Go to ACLJ.org. You will see the Life and Liberty Drive right on the homepage there at ACLJ.org. Your gift is still doubled, so we encourage you to make that donation. This is a donation drive, folks. We want you to be part of that Life and Liberty Drive today at ACLJ.org. We'll be right back taking your questions at 1-800-684-3110. right, welcome back to Secchio. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We'll get to your calls in just a minute. I wanted to play this soundbite, this again. We played a Senator Christopher Wray's bite earlier, but this is when Senator Hawley was questioning Attorney General Garland back in March on this FBI targeting of radical traditionalist Catholics because of their views might be open to, again, recruitment by radical extremist groups in the United States, all just without evidence, by the way. And they literally put people inside. They put people inside Catholic churches. We know that. It has occurred at least on one occasion. There was an agent put inside to try and recruit confidential informants. Take a listen to this exchange.
The FBI field office in Richmond on the 23rd of January of this year issued a memorandum in which they advocated for, and I quote, the exploration of new avenues for tripwire and source development against traditionalist Catholics, it's their language, including those who favor the Latin Mass. Attorney General, are you cultivating sources and spies in Latin Mass parishes and other Catholic parishes around the country?
No, the Justice Department does not do that. It does not do investigations based on religion. I saw the document you have.
What did you do about it?
It's appalling. It's appalling. I'm in complete agreement with you. I understand that the FBI has withdrawn it and is now looking into how this could ever have happened.
How did it happen?
That's what they're looking into. But I'm totally in agreement with you. That document is appalling.
Appalling is an understatement, but who's going to be held responsible and accountable? Now, we're going to find out, and then it's going to be turned over to Capitol Hill, and we've already sued the FBI, and we're in federal court of appeals in the District of Columbia for the agents that have said, look what's going on here, that this is ridiculous, this is repulsive and appalling. But it wasn't just one office. It was that office in coordination with the office in Portland and with the office in Oregon. And your American Center for Law and Justice is getting to the bottom of it. We're taking your calls as well at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110.
I want to go to Fred in Tennessee online, too. Hey, Fred.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Glad you guys take my call. My question is there any redress for the grievous actions that the government, the DOJ, the FBI, and everybody else that are coming against the whistleblowers and stuff, yeah. Is there any redress for these gentlemen to get compensation from the government for being screwed the way they are?
We're working on all of that right now, including the two whistleblowers we now represent. We may be announcing some more next week from other agencies. These whistleblowers have lost their pay, so we want that back. They've lost their security clearance, and as Jordan said, that security clearance is their ticket to employment outside of the FBI. So we need to get that back for them. And like I said, we're in federal court on one of them. We're dealing with the Inspector General on another case with DOJ and trying to negotiate, but who knows what's going to happen on any of those. I assume most of these end up in court, which is where we do our work. So if I can get them resolved, great. If not, we'll go to court. But what you need to understand is we have now fully engaged on behalf of these whistleblowers, and there's many more that our office is talking to.
Yeah, that's right. And we, again, encourage you as part of our Life and Liberty drive to support our work there as we continue to, as you say, engage on additional whistleblowers from different departments as well. Support the ACLJ's work. The more we're able to fundraise, the more resources are available for us, whether it's work with inside the ACLJ, clients outside the ACLJ, all of the work that we've been talking about just today on the broadcast. We could double down, triple down, quadruple down if we have the financial support from you. And it is our grassroots donors that make that impact. It is the $10 and $20 donations. So be part of, again, this Life and Liberty drive today at ACLJ.org. Your donations will be doubled again. So it's an important time financially for us at the ACLJ and the ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive. I'm going to go back to the folks. We got a call coming in on the legal issues and, of course, the 41 charges, 19 defendants in the Georgia case brought yesterday against Donald Trump and others. Andre in Georgia on line four. Hey, Andre.
Hello. I'm wanting to know two answers to two questions and whether your petition drives would be appropriate for it. Can the governor pardon the Georgia indictments, nope, and discharge the whole case? Two,
Is there a way that the attorney general can remove Fannie from the district attorney's position, like I think the Georgia or the Florida governor removed that one DA?
Now, the governor, could the governor remove a district attorney? They might have the power to do that in Georgia. Each state's different there. That would be the state government. Similar to what DeSantis did on the pardon issue. Again, so you take your right to take it out of the federal issue. Does the Georgia governor have that kind of power?
They can remove a DA, but I think politically that is not going to happen.
No. They have a pardon power like that?
The pardon power does not work that way. In Georgia, it's a pardon and parole board. It is not the governor's determination. So, no, they do not allow it.
And just to add a footnote there, it is the most hostile Republican government to Donald Trump in the country.
Yep.
And I think there's actually an article, interesting up, that you brought this call up today. And I was just on Drudge Report and just refreshed, and it talked about how the Georgia Republican Party is at odds with the rest of the conservative movement in its distrust and dislike. I think dislike is a better word, of Donald Trump from the top down, from the governor to the lieutenant governor. So it would be, again, even though you've got a very Republican government in Georgia right now at the state level, these are not very friendly officials to Donald Trump and Trump associates, to put it that way. But they don't even really have they may have the power on the DA. They don't really have the pardon power there like the president would in a federal issue. We can go back to the phones at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Chris is in Ohio on line one. Hey, Chris.
How you doing, sir? My question is, what would you do if you were the attorney general, hypothetically? If either one of you was the Attorney General of the United States and Donald Trump had been elected, how would you deal with all the corruption of the Democrats?
Well, I think what you deal first is the corruption inside their own agencies. So I think you have to look inside. If your job is the Attorney General, your job is not the corruption of all the Democrats to get elected to Congress. Your job is to clean up the Department of Justice. That is not an easy task. You know, we've talked to Mike Pompeo about that significantly. He oversaw both the CIA, which is, again, one of the most secretive agencies inside the U.S. government. And then, of course, the State Department, which is one of the largest bureaucracies inside the State Department. In just a couple of years, what you're hoping to do is accomplish the president's goals so you can bring in enough of your own people to get that done. I think if to be a reformer, Dan, it's almost like a new way of looking at getting elected. You're not just getting elected to be in place, to put your political appointees in, to then do the job that the president has assigned and the policies of the president. You would actually have to put someone in whose main job as attorney general, or maybe a deputy attorney general whose main job it was to clear out the bad actors. Because there's laws, interesting enough, the laws don't protect the whistleblowers inside the FBI and the policies and procedures, but they do protect the bad actors.
No, that's exactly right.
It's very hard to fire FBI.
We know that. Look what happened in the McCabe case. I mean, so
he got his money back.
Yeah, the pressure that's put on these people, though, is incredibly difficult. But this is where we've got this multi-pronged attack that I think is working so well. And in that context, remember, and this is absolutely true, if we don't stand up, the country doesn't survive. I mean, does the country survive? Yeah, it doesn't just survive the same way. So I want to tell you something as we get ready to take in the last segment of the calls, and we're going to take all your phone calls. So get on the lines here at 1-800-684-3110. We are halfway through our Life and Liberty drive. The first time we've ever done one like this. It's been a great success. And it's a great success because it really has never felt more crucial as we discover more information about what is really happening by these deep state actors, which we now know. And now their covert war on Christians, which we found out is coast to coast. 1,200 pages of documents are going to be produced. We filed against the Biden FBI over its targeting of pro-lifers and Christians. 1,200 documents have to be produced. We'll find out what was going on. We're representing these whistleblowers, including now at the D.C. Court of Appeals, who exposed the corrupt behavior inside these agencies. Director Ray testified that the targeting of these Christian churches was limited. That was incorrect. We are getting more information there. And as I said, 1,200 pages of documents relating to the targeting has been will be turned over to us. That's only the beginning. There is a lot more to do. This is why we created the Life and Liberty Drive. The deep state is attacking our religious freedoms. That includes yours. They want to bully Christians into silence. That includes you. We are fighting back and exposing their corruption in court, which is where we need to do it, and in the halls of Congress. You are a vital part of this fight. We don't get to do this without you. They need us, and we need you. Have your gift doubled right now through our Life and Liberty Drive. Go to ACLJ.org. The Life and Liberty Drive is spelled out right there. If you're getting an email from us today, respond. If you're watching on any of our social media platforms, share it with your friends. Make sure you're subscribing, folks. We've got a lot of people that are watching. Coming up in the next segment, Jordan, we're going to take more calls.
That's right. 1-800-684-3110 to be part of the show. We want you to share it on social media. Once we're over with the live broadcast, too, people can watch the show throughout the day. We do recaps as well. Take out different clips from the show on different issues we've discussed. Share all those with your friends and family. Make sure you like it wherever you're. If you're watching the broadcast now, that you're subscribed there, you're liking it, you're sharing it, and be part of our Life and Liberty Drive at ACLJ.org. All right, welcome back to Secure. We are taking your phone calls out. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. There's one line open right now in our last segment, so you have to get in now, get that final line to get your call in. I want to go right to the phones. We'll go first to Shane in California on line two. Hey, Shane.
Hi, how are you doing? My question is this. I recently took a Department of Homeland Security course as part of my Master of Science in Political Science degree, and at the very beginning of the course, they said that there is no fixed definition of terrorism. As a matter of fact, they said that there's thousands of different interpretations of what terrorism is. And when you go to each of the federal agencies, the FBI, the CIA, the Department of Homeland Security, they each have their own definition of terrorism, which means the definition of terrorism is fluid, which also means it can change based on the administration that's in power. So my question is to you guys, is there any way that the ACLJ can start to unify those agencies, force government to unify those agencies into one definition of terrorism? Because I feel like that's probably one of the reasons why they're able to do these domestic infiltrations of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a really good point. I will tell you this. The definition of terrorism is like Jell-O. You kind of can move it around your plate. I mean, it still stays together. This is the problem, and it is a problem. And by the way, I know this from work back during 9/11 when I was working with John Ashcroft, when he was Attorney General of the United States, and some other department that we worked on these issues of defining terrorism. There was a coherent definition of terrorism, by the way, up until about 2010. And then when the Obama administration got their footing, that kind of changed. And, you know, was it John Brennan who had that famous quote about, you know, there's no terrorists there, you know, it was ridiculous. And they turned it into an academic exercise instead of what it really is. But let me tell you what we have to do. We've got to root out from the FBI this idea that they can go after people of faith just because they're faith and start investigations with no probable cause. No, because no matter how you define terrorism, if you don't have probable cause, you shouldn't be doing the investigation. Period. And that's why we're getting to the bottom of this.
Yeah, I think, again, and I think you're right, Shane, this idea of that this domestic violent extremism, this new language we've been learning about, that how many times have we been told this is the number one threat to our country? I mean, we've seen riots, we've seen violence, we've seen certainly crime rise in our country, but I think most of the crime in our country, it has nothing to do with any political movement whatsoever. It's just crime. Most of what we see, violence at the southern border, it has nothing to do with any political movements, except for maybe the left with bad border policies. But it's not tied to, it's not like people crossing the border from a political movement. There are, of course, domestic extremist incidents in our country. We've seen them over time and time again. You can't ignore the Oklahoma City bombings, even what happened on January 6th. Okay? But are they the number one threat to our country? I've never seen it that way. I've never seen Americans as the number one threat to our country. I see the number one threat to our country is China, the economic power they have, the military power they have when they unite with countries like Iran. When the world starts ignoring our power, like Russia, and starts thinking, you know, I can go invade Ukraine, I'll annex Crimea, Syria will use chemical weapons on its own people, they'll claim that there's a red line, they cross the red line, and we don't do anything until a different president was in office. You remember one of the first actions of President Trump? people forget was when Syria was engaging in those attacks on its own people. This was outside of just the war on ISIS, but it was the Assad government trying to use the war against ISIS as an attempt to go after its own political opponents and their militant groups. When they did cross that red line, he was sitting next to, was it President Xi of China at Mar-a-Lago? And while he's sitting there, the Tomahawk missiles were fired. I don't know if it was 40 or 50 Tomahawk missiles from the United States into Syria. And it showed the U.S. power. You cross the red line, we hit you so hard, you don't know how to respond. And they didn't. There was no significant response from the Syrian government. And ISIS was ultimately eliminated and the caliphate was destroyed. So a two-front war was handled there. Those are the significant enemies. That doesn't mean there's not problem political movements inside the U.S. That would be stupid to say that there's not. But are they the greatest threat? No, the left has made them out to be the greatest threat. And I think that shifting definition of what an extremist is, a lot of us identify. A lot of us would be identified as extremists by our government agencies right now.
No,
many of us.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about
it. If not, most of us listening to this broadcast right now would fall under some category.
You probably don't want to do FOIAs on people you know. I mean, because you don't know how they're doing it. All right, let's go right back to the phones at 1-800-684-3110. Let's take Nancy's call next. Nancy?
Hi. I was calling concerning the two-tier system in our country right now and what Americans should do to help stop this. I mean, me and my family, I have a granddaughter in college right now, and she's being taught by unjust people that are just going, you know, being outrageous. And
well, I know the struggles in the universities because they are become a hostile incubator of hate. And I won't even go speak at colleges anymore. I just won't do it. I won't do it. I get asked. I say no. I mean, the couple of times I did it in the last 3 or 4 years, it was just such an unpleasant experience. You say to yourself, why would I subject myself to this? Just don't do it. Now, what can you do? Join the ACLJ. And I don't say that trite. I say that for real, because that can be a way for you to engage on all of these issues, because that allows us to deploy lawyers, government affairs experts, media people all over the world to stand for freedom and liberty.
Yeah, but I think today as Americans, we still have a lot of tools to fight for our country. I mean, we have elections, the legal system, and sometimes it may feel like it may be weighted against us, but we still have those institutions. We know if we overwhelmingly show up at the ballot box, we win and can win. And if we vote, if we talk to our neighbors and we talk to our friends and we aren't embarrassed of who we support politically. I think that was a problem in 2020. In 2016, we caught the left off guard. In 2020, way too many Americans were embarrassed to either get out and vote or tell their friends who they voted for. They were like embarrassed to vote for Donald Trump. And it wasn't because they didn't like Donald Trump. It was because the media told you you should be embarrassed. Or your company. I mean, we've seen it infiltrate that now. What I think is actually, college campuses have always been a little crazy. But where we've seen it infiltrate now is in the corporate world, which used to be much more mainstream. It
Not
wasn't
anymore.
Always conservative, but it was very... You know, they basically donated to both sides. You could be a Republican, you could be a Democrat. Don't bring it to work. We're here to make money. We're here to make a product.
Anymore.
And that is not the case anymore.
And it's beyond just the woke stuff. It's with corporate politics too. But having said that, look, here's what we have to do. We gotta address the issues we can address. What's in our jurisdiction? The courts are in our jurisdiction. The media is in our jurisdiction. The halls of Congress are in our jurisdiction. And international tribunals. And that's what we do at the ACLJ with offices all over the globe. We are halfway through our drive. We are doing great. I have to say thank you to those that have participated. We're ahead of where we anticipated being this time of the month. We do have a long way to go to get to our goal. We got 14 days to do it. Your support's critical. You're a vital part of this fight. We don't do it without you. You know, I keep saying, these folks need us, and we need you. So they need us, folks. You become part of this team. Go to aclj.org. Participate in the Life and Liberty Drive. Your gift will be doubled. You can also respond to our emails. And if you're not getting our emails, folks, make sure you get those at aclj.org. And make sure you're liking all of our social media platforms so you can stay engaged and updated. We'll talk to you tomorrow.